The fall sermon series, Miracles of the Week, features a healing story with the prophet Elisha. It's from 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 16. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man and in high favor with his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man, though a mighty warrior, suffered from leprosy. Now the Arameans, on one of their raids, had taken a young girl captive from the land of Israel. She served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his lord just what the girl from the land of Israel had said. And the king of Aram said, "Go then, and I will send along a letter to the king of Israel." He went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of garments. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, "When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent to you my servant Naaman, that you may cure him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read this letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to give a death or life that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Just look and see how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me." But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent a message to the king. "Why have you torn your clothes? Let him come to me, that he may learn that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and halted at the entrance of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, "Go, wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean." But Naaman became angry and went away, saying, "I thought that for me he would surely come out and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, and would wave his hand over the spot and cure the leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" He turned and went away in a rage. But his servants approached him and said to him, "Father, if the prophet had commanded you to do something difficult, would you not have done it? How much more when all he said to you was, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and immersed himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. His flesh was restored like the flesh of a young boy, and he was clean. Then he returned to the man of God, he and all his company. He came and stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Please accept a present from your servant." But Elisha said, "As the Lord lives, whom I serve, I will accept nothing." Naaman urged him to accept, but Elisha refused. The word of the Lord.
Now may the words of our mouths, the meditations of our hearts, be acceptable to you, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Well, today we have close to the close of our sermon series on Old Testament miracles. The final one will be this next Wednesday evening at our Thanksgiving Eve service. Today's miracle of the week, as we have heard, is the healing of Naaman, and it has some certain present-day application. We're going to kind of look at it verse by verse. If you want to put some notes in your bulletin or find places in the reading where we are with this, there's not a schedule in there. There's not an outline, but jot some notes which apply to you. Verse 1 introduces us to a man by the name of Naaman, and he was a general in the Aram army. That would be present-day Syria, just to give you a context. The story tells us that he's touted as a successful, decorated commander, and he was highly esteemed by his boss, the king of the Arameans. The story says this, quote, "Though he was a mighty warrior, he suffered from leprosy." The story also says he was a great man in high favor. Let's talk about this leprosy. Leprosy was a dreaded skin disease. It was incurable at the time. It was driven by a slow-growing bacteria that infects the skin, slowly rots the flesh away, eventually bringing a person to an early demise. Once diagnosed with leprosy, the person was required to isolate themselves from the general population. Social distance, if you will. But their quarantine was not just for 14 days, as is for us with the COVID. It was a permanent separation. You see, leprosy was this devastatingly transmissible disease. And it then not only affected you physically, but relationally and emotionally, separating you from family, friends, community, and church. The biblical decree for anyone who had leprosy, if they were coming close to contact with a healthy human being, they were to cry out, "Unclean! Unclean!" so that others would steer clear. We think we have it bad today, huh? Many times lepers lived in caves, they lived in colonies, and they put themselves in a position to have a sense of togetherness, community with others. But rarely, very rarely, did they have up close and personal encounters with other human beings that were healthy. So I find it very interesting that this man, Naaman, who has leprosy, has a special privilege. He's a visiting with the king, even. He's leading an army. And so he must have been some sort of a military stud, if you would. Maybe he had an early form of leprosy, but I don't think it really mattered. But he got an exemption. He got a free pass. He was able to intermingle in society. And the king must have really needed him for king and country. We don't know all that for sure, but I think we can read between the lines and even in the text that that's true. We don't know exactly why he was able to intermix with society, but we do know this. The story tells us he was a mighty warrior. This tells us that illness, disease, spread it out, troubles, irritations, challenges, none of those things discriminate, even among the high and mighty. You see, even the mighty and marvelous, even the brightest and the best, even the strongest and the most successful, even the rich and the famous, all are vulnerable. You know, I think of so many star status people in our minds who may be heroes or heroines, persons that we sometimes put on a platform, put on a pedestal. Sometimes we think, sometimes they think they're invincible. But they too can encounter illness and accident, problems, addictions, and even death. I think about a Hall of Famer, baseball Hall of Famer, Lou Gehrig. Maybe you've heard that name. He was awarded more honors in his profession of baseball than you can shake a bat at. He celebrated 6 World Series championships. He played for the New York Yankees, but at age 37, he contracted ALS. Not sure about the pronunciation. Someone could probably do it better, but amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. It knocked him out of the game that he loved, eventually took his life. I think about him. I think about an actor, high status, Chris Reeve. He played Superman. Remember that, Superman? In some of those episodes and movies, at the age of 42, he was thrown from a horse and he was paralyzed from the shoulders down. Think about our 32nd U.S. President, Franklin D. Roosevelt. At the age of 39, he was paralyzed, confined to a wheelchair for the rest of his days. I think about Princess Diane, age 36. She died in that car crash as the paparazzi was chasing her through town. The list of those with fame and fortune, the high and mighty, the strong and prestigious, just goes on and on. You know, fill in the blanks with Patsy Cline, Stevie Wonder, Roberto Clemente, Kobe Bryant, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Buddy Holly, John Denver, Abe Lincoln, JFK. Naaman was a mighty commander. His status, his title, his name and his fame did not exclude him from experiencing challenges. You see, neither does our faith. Neither does our faith necessarily insulate us from going through heartaches, troubles, hardship, illness, problems, temptations, even death. Even some of the most faithful Bible characters dealt with these issues. Noah had a pandemic flood on his hands. Moses had to confront the most powerful man in the world at the time. That was the king of Egypt. Saul had his demons. Job had his problems, grief, depression. Peter was unjustly thrown into prison and then later martyred. Paul was shipwrecked, beaten, arrested. He had some sort of thorn in the flesh that he brought before the Lord that disturbed him. Jeremiah the prophet was put in a dry well and then in stocks in public by his very own people. Elijah struggled with suicidal thoughts. There was Sarah, Rachel, and Hannah. They wanted to have a baby, but they had trouble conceiving. Mary was accused of being pregnant out of wedlock. All these well-known biblical characters, as well as some of those high-ranking, or how we see them, people that we read in the tabloids, as well as plain old you and me. You and me and those who are closest to us, who are valuable, who are esteemed, who are important to us, mighty in our families, strong on the team, key in our offices, crucial in our communities. Even though Naaman was a mighty commander, even though you may be a person of faith, trials are common. They're universal to all humanity, and they cross over races, creeds, religions, socioeconomic groups, and age demographics. I know you know this. I know it. But when it comes into our lives, we've got to be reminded of it. We do not live with a hedge of protection around us. We don't live in a silo. All humans need some form of healing if we think about it. Verses 2 and 3 indicate that the Arameans and the people of God, the Israelites, they were rivals. They had border skirmishes. They fought with one another. There was a raid that this story tells us about where the Arameans abduct a young Israelite girl. She ends up being a slave in Naaman's household. The girl was aware of her boss, Naaman's physical condition, his ailment. And so she tells her boss, who is Naaman's wife, and Naaman's wife tells him that there's this prophet in Israel, in Samaria, who could possibly bring some healing on him. We don't want to pass over this without taking the nugget from it. It reminds us that the Old Testament has grace in it. You know, so often the Old Testament gets an unfair rap about being just about the law, just about the law, just about the law. But this is a story of Old Testament grace. You see, this young Israelite girl is stolen from her home, stolen from her family, her people. And now she's a slave, get it, a slave, in Naaman's household. We're not talking about someone taking her computer. We're not talking about somebody stealing her dog out of the backyard. We're talking about kidnapping in the first degree. But instead of her being raw and bitter, thinking maybe, well, the heck with you, I'm just going to let you die in your sandals, rot in your sandals, and maybe your old lady will do the same. Maybe like some of us might do. This young girl shares with them the resource of grace. It reminds us that as people of God, we're called upon to live in a framework of grace, not grudge. Redemption, not resentment. Not bitter, but better. These upcoming holidays can be some tough times to be around family members. I know we love those who we love, but sometimes those that we really struggle with are right in our own household or in our family network. And, you know, it may be the ex-spouse trying to figure out the rotation of kids during the holidays, or maybe it's friction with the in-laws, or possibly that uncle or aunt you just don't like to be around. They're maybe vulgar or racist, but maybe it's family members who bring home less than desirable significant others. Even when we don't like those who Jesus would refer to as enemies, people that we're at odds with, God calls us to think about, by the power of His Holy Spirit, not by our own strength, but by the power of the Holy Spirit, to do to others as He has done to us. And that is to serve up a plate of grace, and somehow, some way, to show love or appreciation, or just to do those things that God would call us to do instead of those things that we want to do out of revenge. Our verses go on with 4 through 7. Nahum hears about this possible prophet in Israel. That comes through, of course, the slave girl who offers him grace. And his wife tells him about it, and then he goes to his lord, the king. And he tells the king, there's a possible cure for me in Israel. The king says, let me send a letter with you, a letter of introduction. Maybe it'll kind of ease any tensions between the Arameans and the Israelites, and it'll put a foot in the door for you. And in this letter, in addition to it, the king backs Naaman with a caravan of wealth. It's like Fort Knox. 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of garments. Let's look at that a little closer. 10 talents of silver. You know how much a talent was? 20 years of income was one talent. One talent is 20 years of income. Let's just think about that in just some round numbers. Let's say $50,000 a year is your annual income. Time 10 talents, because it's 10 talents. It's 10 times 20. And so we are talking about 10 times 20 times 50,000. Do the math. That's $10 million in silver. Well, we're not talking chump change. That's a lot of money. And that's just one piece of what's going on here. The second thing is 6,000 shekels of gold. A shekel was somewhere between a quarter of an ounce and a half an ounce. Let's be conservative on it and just say it's a quarter of an ounce. That's 64 shekels to a pound divided by 6,000 shekels. That's almost 94 pounds of gold. I looked up gold this last Wednesday, and it was selling for over $1,800 an ounce. That's about $28,000 a pound for gold. Do the math on that. That would be another $2.5 million. We won't even throw in what the cost of the garments might have been. It was probably for your whole household, not just for one person. We're talking in the neighborhood of at least $13 million. You see, Naaman's not bringing flowers. He's not bringing a Thanksgiving ham or a box of chocolates and an Amazon card. This is serious money, all in the hope of being healed. But as the story goes on, when the king of Israel reads the letter asking Naaman to be healed, the money part doesn't even matter to him, because the king of Israel cries out, "Am I God? Am I able to cure someone of leprosy?" And then he thinks that his rival, the king of the Arams, is messing with him, trying to pick a fight. So in anger, what does he do? He tears his clothes. He rends his cloth. And that's an ancient way of showing anger or displeasure, pain, sometimes grief. The king is basically saying, there is no way in the universe I can heal someone, and there's no amount of money that I can do that with. And plus, this king is trying to pick another fight with me. Well, verses 8 and 9 say that prophet Elisha catches wind. You know, it's probably like Fredericksburg. You know, when news goes around, it goes around fast, doesn't it? And so news catches Elisha's ear. He hears that someone's looking for healing, and the king had torn his robes, and so he inquires. And he finds out about this man, Naaman. And so he says, have him come to my house. Prophet Elisha says, have him come to my house, the sick man. So this Naaman excitedly and expectantly takes this impressive entourage of horses and chariots and this big, big bankroll. And he rolls up to Elisha's house. What does Elisha do? He doesn't even come out of his house to greet the man, this mighty warrior. But what does he do? He sends out one of his minions, sends out one of his servants. And the servant says that my master, the prophet Elisha, says, go down to the Jordan River and wash 7 times and you'll be healed. If you look closely at the story, Naaman takes exception. And he says, I thought for me that he would surely come out, call on the name of his Lord, maybe wave his hand over my spot where I'm suffering, and he'd cure my leprosy. We're going to pause here and grab 4 really important takeaways in this message. You see, Naaman says this, I thought for me, you would do it. You'd come out and you'd heal me. I thought for me. Do you hear the for me part? Don't we all think that things should be done for me? That we're so special that when we call the doctor or the therapist or when we have an emergency with our vehicle, the repair shop, and they should do it the next day, right? I mean, they say that they'll get to it in 2 weeks or maybe 2 or 3 months. I mean, don't they just know how important this is? Don't they know how important I am? Earlier this summer, I broke my glasses. It's time to have an eye exam, so I thought I'd just combine the two. So I called Dr. Plenicky's office, and I made the very first available appointment. You know how long that was? 10 weeks in the future. I mean, I know she is really a great doctor, and that's why. And she works her fingers to the bone, and she does a super tremendous job as one of God's agents as a physician. But I was thinking to myself, are you kidding me? Does not this receptionist know who I am? I'm Bobby Vitek. No, I'm Pastor Bobby. I'm Ann's pastor. I could skip her at communion if I wanted to. But I bit my tongue. I bit my tongue. I didn't say a thing, but I was really not feeling the love. Did I not make myself clear? My glasses are broken, and the former glasses, the pair that I had, that I was wearing, this super old school set, and the lenses were all blotched and spotty. A couple of people encouraged me to call Ann. Call Ann. Call her. Call her. You have her number. She'll fit you in. Ask for that VIP treatment. But I pondered it and I thought, no, I'm not going to play that card this time. This was the lesson for me. Sometimes it's good to have an ego check. Take your place in line, VTech, like everybody else. Yeah, a little humility. No. A lot of humility goes a long way in shaping our character to reflect the character of Christ. And not always be first, but sometimes to be last. It was a good lesson. Just one I needed to be reminded of. That's the first takeaway. Humility. Humility. Second takeaway is that Naaman was looking for a quick fix. You know, for Elisha, he wanted the prophet just to wave his hand over the sick spot. Wave his hand over the infected area and Naaman would be healed. Isn't that just like me? Isn't that just like you sometimes? We want the silver bullet. We want the instant cure. We want the microwave magic. You know, I think us being in this COVID season reminds us of that, right? I mean it's been a long time. And we are sick and tired of being sick and tired of it. We're exhausted from it. We just want someone to wave their hand over it and get rid of it. We just want someone to come up with that vaccine so we can get back to regular life. And now as the virus raises its ugly head in this current spike, we want that even more so. You see, Daniel talked about it in his children's message. The one thing we don't typically like to do is to wait. Because what goes with waiting is patience. For most of us, we like to pray to God for patience. I know I'm a bit impatient. We like that old prayer that says, Lord, please grant me patience. But give it to me now. Waiting involves a spiritual opportunity for us to bear one of those fruit of the Spirit that Galatians 5 talks about. And one of those is patience. Patience. How can I exercise humility? How can I exercise patience in my current situation? The third takeaway is Elisha instructs Naaman to dip himself seven times in the Jordan River, to which Naaman goes on to say, are not the Abana and the Pharpar rivers in Damascus better than the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? Well, evidently, compared to these Damascus rivers, the Jordan is really just a kind of dirty little creek, a dirty little area of water that just kind of streams. It's not pristine. It's not clear. It's not clean that we might sometimes see our Guadalupe River in, our Pedernales River in. It was a dirty little river. There's a basketball commentator by the name of Charles Barkley who never misses a chance to stir up the San Antonio fans. You know what he talks about, don't you? He opens his big mouth and he tells everybody on national TV about San Antonio. He doesn't like San Antonio, he doesn't like the Spurs, and he doesn't like our river. Barkley says it's a creek. And second, he always makes fun of it, saying it's a dirty creek, and I wouldn't eat no fish out of it, quote Barkley. Naaman isn't pleased with the treatment plan that Elisha gives him. Instead, he wants to write his own prescription. Sort of like my dad. I'm probably going to turn into my dad one of these days. My dad in his 80s would go to the doctor, and the doctor would tell him to eat differently, quit smoking, take better care of himself. And so what did my dad do? He fired him. He fired him. He went and hired another one. If that doctor didn't tell him what he wanted to hear, he'd fire him too. He would keep going until he found a doctor that would say what he wanted to hear. I remember Dad saying, I like this new doctor. I like him. I said, what about him, Dad? He says, I'm doing fine. Just keep doing what you're doing. Okay, Dad. You see, we all like to come up with our own treatment plan. And whether that treatment plan is about working on our marriage, or losing weight, or being in God's Word, or forgiving others, or tithing, or serving, whatever it has to do, all these things are very, very hard. And again, we want things to happen quickly. We want to write our own prescription plan. Instead of Naaman, he doesn't want to do the seven-day thing. He doesn't want to do the seven-time thing. He wants it to be immediate. So God calls us in this particular part to simply obey. Obey His Word. We don't have to be changing it, fixing it. It don't need to be fixed. So that's the third takeaway. First one's humility. Second one then has to do with patience. Third one has to do here with obeying. And the fourth takeaway, he says, dunk yourself seven times. Seven times. What's the significance of seven in the Bible? Seven is a holy number. It's a number for completeness. And I know that many times healing doesn't happen overnight. It can happen overnight. I do know some people in our congregation who have said that they were healed almost instantaneously. The tumor that was there is no longer there. It's gone. Doctors say, I don't know how that happened. Healing can happen via sudden miracle. But more often than not, the miracle of healing is not an event, but it's a process. Many times those processes are up and down, just like dunking seven times in the river. Seven is a number of days for creation. Seven is the number of heavens in Judaism. Seven is